As we begin today, I want to start in the book of Judges, chapter number 1, verse number 20, that has material that parallels up with things that we have in Joshua chapter number 14 regarding how when the, I think, year of the seventh year of the Israelis being in the Promised Land, the Judean tribe and the Simeon tribe were tapped to be the first ones to go back into the regions that they had already defeated under Joshua earlier in this period, and basically settle in those territories. You remember that Caleb specifically came to Joshua and said, I'm going to do a little bit of a fun take on this, okay? But it's basically, all right, Joshua, you remember back when we were younger, back in our 40s, back in our days as the spies, that Moses promised me that I could have the area that I wanted for my inheritance. Well, that place is Kiriath Arba, or Hebron. I want it. I know there are giants there. Doesn't matter. I can take them. I'm just as strong and fit now as I was way back then. And so Joshua gave him permission. Basically gave permission to the entire Judean army and the Simeonite army to go in and really take on the remnants of the Canaanites in those regions and to make sure that Caleb got his slot, got his inheritance spot. And so that's what it says in Judges chapter 1, verse 20. It says, Hebron was given to Caleb as Moses had said, and he drove out from it the three sons of Anak. Now those are named in the last verse of Joshua 14. The name of Hebron formerly was Kiriath Arba. Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim, and the land had rest from war. And so the three sons of Anak were in charge, controlled Kiriath Arba. But Hebron, or Kiriath Arba, was taken over by Caleb. And I believe that all happened in the beginning of the seventh year of Israel being in the land. From our standpoint, I think we're talking about 1410 BC. Now, the next part that we're going to go to, we're going to do a lot of skipping of the words, but don't panic. The reason we're going to do that is because these are lists of map coordinates based on names of places and cities with inside those map coordinates. We would typically use a map in order to glean this information. I'm actually going to encourage you to do exactly that. Go out there into the bookstores or go online and find a map that shows the Israel, land of Canaan, in the time of the Israelis going into there, into taking the tribal regions, something like the 12 tribes of Israel, something like that is what you'll be looking for. So the first tribal region that is described is that of Judah. And so chapter 15 of Joshua says, the allotment for the tribe of the people of Judah, according to their clans, reached southward to the border or boundary of Edom to the wilderness of Zin at the farthest south. So what we see at the very beginning here is a description of topographical places that help find the border around Israel. And we start on the southeast corner of it. We start at the south end of the south bay of the Dead Sea. We go south from there until we get to Kadesh Barnea. Now, I've told you, I believe the authentic Kadesh Barnea was a place now known as Paran, roughly two-thirds of the way, I think, or half the way southward from the south end of the Dead Sea toward the Gulf of Aqaba. It was at the mouth of a wadi system. A wadi is a wet weather stream. It cuts a canyon. It is a very clear geographical marker. And so you turn westward there at Kadesh Barnea, and you go up the wadi system until you get to the break between two watersheds. This is described in verse number 3, you go south of Kadesh Barnea along by Hezron up to Adar, turns about to Karkah, passes along to Azmon, which we don't know exactly where any of these places are anymore. But the next part we do know. And then it goes out by the brook of Egypt and comes to its end at the sea. The brook of Egypt is known to us today as the Wadi al-Arish. We know where it dumps into the southeast corner of the Mediterranean. And so we effectively have a southern border that starts at Kadesh Barnea, goes up to the end of the watershed of Kadesh Barnea, over the little bump, the little hill, and then it joins the watershed of the Wadi el-Arish all the way to the Med. That's the south border. And then, of course, the west border is easy. It's the Mediterranean. Now, the north border, it starts its description down by the north end of the Dead Sea. This is in verse number 6. It goes up a little ways, up the Jordan River, and then it hangs a left. It goes westward. And what does it do? It effectively follows the Wadi system on the south side of the plains of Jericho. And it follows that Wadi system all the way up into the hill country just north of where Jerusalem is today. And then it goes a little bit south to a place that's referred to as En Shemesh. Now, En means spring. And so En Shemesh seems to be the top of the Kidron Valley drainage system. So it's a little bit north of the old city of Jerusalem. And then it goes down along the east side of the old city of Jerusalem. And it ends, this is verse 7, at En Rogel. Now, En Rogel is another spring. En means spring. It seems to be somewhere close to the convergence of two valleys. The Kidron Valley coming from the north, and the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom coming from the west. And effectively, that's what we see next, verse 8, that the boundary goes up by the valley of the son of Hinnom at the southern shoulder of the Jebusite, that is Jerusalem. So this is on the south side of what we call the old city today. There's a very well-defined valley there called the Hinnom Valley, and it goes east and west. And so the boundary is following geographical features. The boundary then, we're told, verse 8, goes up to the top of the mountain that lies over against the valley of Hinnom on the west at the northern end of the valley of Rephaim. Now, as the valley of Hinnom gets closer to its source on the west, the southwest corner of the Old City area, there's another valley system, another drainage system that heads off to the southwest. That is the Valley of Rephaim, the Valley of the Giants. And so we know exactly where that's at as well. So right around that convergence of two drainage systems, the boundary goes up and over another hill. It says the boundary extends from the top of the mountain to the spring of the waters of Nephtoah. Now, we're pretty sure we know where the springs of Nephtoah are. They are the beginning of a drainage system that heads off to the Med. And so the boundary bends around to Baalah, which just means the place of the Lord. And we're told that this is actually Kiriath Yearim. I'm going to give you a little bit of a heads up for later. Kiriath Yearim is the place that the Ark of the Covenant will be brought back to supernaturally by some cows that are pulling a cart from the cities of the Philistines in a story in the book of 1 Samuel. It ends up that the Ark of the Covenant stays at Kiriath Yearim a long time. And so it is given the name, basically, Place of the Lord, which in Canaanite, which the Israelis were using at that time, is Baalah. Baalah, the Lord. Now, we know where Kiriath Yearim is, and so from there, the boundary effectively follows a westward path, keeping connection to that water system that starts at the waters of Nephtoah. And it ends up going past Beth Shemesh. It goes past Timnah. We know exactly where those are. It goes north of Ekron. We know where that's at. It goes past Shikaron and Mount Baalah. We know where those are. And then out to Jabneel, which in the New Testament time period is sometimes referred to as Yamnia, and we know exactly where that's at. And then the boundary comes to its end at the sea. So those are the descriptions in chapter 15 of the boundaries of the tribal region of Judah. And they can be plotted out on a map pretty clearly. And then we have the story here. We already talked about it at the beginning today. About how Caleb, verse 14, drove out from there, that is Kiriath Arba, from Hebron, the three sons of Anak, Sheshai, Ahiman, Talmai, the descendants of Anak. And then we have the story we already talked about how Caleb, being kind of the military leader of the Judah tribe, decides that the next place that they should take on is Kiriath Sefer, which is apparently off to the southwest of Hebron. And he puts out this notice: whoever strikes Kiriath Sefer, captures it, to him I'm going to give Aksah, my daughter, as a wife. Now remember, Caleb is in his 80s, but he has an unmarried daughter. So he's been keeping the family refreshed and growing for quite some time in his life. And so what happens is his nephew decides to take up the challenge. Othniel, the son of Kenaz, who's the brother of Caleb, captured it. And he gave him Aksah, his daughter, as wife. The reason I'm bringing this back up again is to reinforce the idea that Othniel is going to be one of the future heroes in the book of Judges. He is going to be one of the judges that steps in once Joshua and Caleb are passed from the scene. And he will become one of the military and judicial leaders of the Israel. And so this is where he gets his start on that. He takes a city and gets married to his cousin because of that. And then the next part is where Aksah comes to Caleb. She urged him to ask her father for a field. She got off her donkey. Caleb said, "What do you want?" She said, "Give me a blessing. since you have given me the land of the Negev, that's the southern desert region of the Jewish tribal inheritance, give me also springs of water. In a desert, you need reliable springs. So that's what she asked for. And he gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. So that's all the description of how the Judah tribe, under the leadership of Joshua, began taking into their full control large portions of their tribal region. And it seems to be happening in the beginning of the seventh year that they were in the land. The next thing that we have, and I'm not going to read all these names, is a big catalog of all the different towns, different cities that are located inside of Judah's territory. To just read it would be like reading the index to a map. And so I'm not going to do that. You can study this, look on a map, and you can see how all of this fits. The thing that I do want you to take note of is verse number 63. But the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the people of Judah, could not drive out. So the Jebusites dwell with the people of Judah at Jerusalem to this day. Now, technically, Yabus, which is the most ancient part of what we call Jerusalem today, it's a little oval hill on the south side. It's bounded on the east by the Kidron Valley, the south, very, very short segment of it, but on the south tip, it has the Hinnom Valley, and then there's the Valley of the Cheesemakers that kind of goes along the western side of this oval. But Yabus was actually just across the border from the northern territory of Judah. It's technically inside Benjamite territory, or what will become Benjamite territory once the rest of the inheritance is assigned later in this year. The Simeonites and the Judah people look at this place on their north border, they don't try to take it on. They just leave it. And that's one of the reasons that the author, a prophet, I think very possibly, the later high priest of Israel, is going to be the author of this. But he says, those Jebusites, they're still in there to this very day. That brings us to chapter 16. Same thing applies here. I'm not going to read every little name here because it's better for you to look at a map. The allotment of the people of Joseph. Now remember that Joseph was the favorite son of the favorite wife of Jacob, who became Israel later. And he kind of manipulated the situation of his family by disinheriting his very wealthy son, Joseph. I mean, Joseph was the second most powerful person in Egypt at this time. So he basically says, I'm not going to give you an inheritance, Joseph. Instead, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to adopt both of your boys as my full sons. And so Jacob effectively gives a double portion to his son Joseph by doing that, which was the portion given to an heir. And so this is one of the reasons I believe that the allotment for Judah, which is the heir tribe in the time of Joshua, and the two tribes of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, the blessed tribes of Joseph, I think that's the reason these three are listed at the very beginning of getting special treatment in getting their territories even before the Israelis meet for the allotment ceremony later in this seventh year that they were in the land. And you might want to keep in mind that Joshua himself is a member of the Joseph tribes, and he will end up with property because of these allotments. So anyway, it basically starts, it says, from the Jordan by Jericho, east of the waters of Jericho in the wilderness, and it goes up from Jericho into the hill country to Beth-El. Now, when you plot it out on a map, this is what you'll find. This line follows the Wadi system that is north of the plains of Jericho, all the way westward, up into the hill country, the high land that's to the west of Jericho, until it comes to the twin cities of Bethel and Ai. And from there, it goes up and over the watershed peak and joins the watershed that goes down to the Med. It says that it goes down westward to the territory of the Japhethites, as far as the territory of Lower Beth-horon. We know where Beth-horon, upper and lower, are located. Then it goes down to Gezer, and it finally ends up the sea. So we know where that line is pretty much located. And so the people of Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim received their inheritance. So that's the south border of the Joseph territory. Then we divide it up between the two tribes. The territory of the people of Ephraim by their clans was as follows. The boundary of their inheritance at the east was Ataroth Adar, as far as Upper Beth-horon. Then the boundary went from there to the sea. So that's a repeat of the southern border we just read earlier. And then on the north is Mikmetat. Then on the east, the boundary turns toward Ta'anath Shilo, passes along beyond to the east to Jano. Jano to Ataroth Tanara touches Jericho, ending of the Jordan. So again, that's that southern border we've already had described. But then from a place called Tapua, the boundary goes westward to the brook of Kana, and ends at the sea. So a little bit east of Shechem. We know where Shechem's at. East of Shechem, down into the Jordan Valley, that's where the northern border of Ephraim starts. So it comes up close to Shechem, kind of jogs a little bit south, goes up and over the watershed, joins a river system or a wadi system that drains into the Med. And so that's the description we see here. Such is the inheritance of the tribe of the people of Ephraim by their clans, along with the towns that were set apart for the people of Ephraim. Within the inheritance of Manasseh, all those towns with their villages. It's interesting that because these are brother tribes, that there's a little bit of fluidity to the border between the two of them regarding which towns belong on which side of the boundary, because the boundary seems to be related to watersheds. And so it's going to depend on the naming of the towns, which side of that watershed drainage system the town for Manasseh or Ephraim is located. And it apparently goes back, it bounces back and forth between the two. Based on that, we can really speed through this next time. The allotment was made to the people of Manasseh. So Ephraim gets the southern part. Manasseh gets the northern part. But first, we have a reminder that Manasseh, first, half of the tribe of Manasseh, gets the allotment on the east side of the Jordan River system. And it goes to a specific family group within Manasseh. to Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, were allotted Gilead and Bashan because he was a man of war. So they asked for that property after God helped them defeat Sihon and Og. Og was the one that controlled the area to the west, to the east of the Sea of Galilee and to the northeast of the Sea of Galilee. And so Manasseh ends up with the bulk of Bashan, which goes by a later name of Golan. Now, once they start dividing this up, Zelophehad's daughters come in and say, hey, remember, we get some of the property because our dad died. That was promised to us by Moses. And so they take care of that business. We've already talked about that. Verse number 7 says that the territory reached from Asher, that hasn't been assigned yet. It will be assigned later. That's up to the northwest along the coast. So the territory of Manasseh basically starts up near the little bump that comes off of the coastline of Israel, and then it goes across to the Jordan Valley. And then the south border, of course, is going to be part of the border with Ephraim. And so these two tribes together end up with a lot of hill country, but they also have some flat land by the coast and up in the Jezreel Valley. And when we come back next time, we're going to hear about how the Joseph tribes kind of complain to Joshua, hey, we need even more property because of the Canaanites being in the way.